Hi, I'm Matt Lieb.
And I'm Vince Mancini.
And this is
Pod Yourself a Gun,
a Sopranos podcast where Vince and I go through every single episode of The Sopranos and talk about it. Wow, as Vince, you didn't...
I know, I let you have that one. It's fine.
Yeah, but you threw me off. Usually it's become your thing to also say and talk about. Never mind, doesn't matter. The point is, thank you so much, everyone, for tuning in once again. Against Vince's wishes, I'm going to suggest that you go into the Apple Podcast Store and give us 5 stars and a review, because it helps us out a lot. Vince doesn't want me to do this up front. He wants me to wait till the end. But you know what? Fuck Vince. I'm sorry. I didn't mean that. That was a little too far. But go ahead and do that for us. It would be very helpful. And let's do it. Ladies and gentlemen, our guest today is, I think, only our second repeat guest in this entire series. You heard him early. You heard him early on. He was on the very first Pod Yourself a Gun, and he's back again today. The chief TV critic for Rolling Stone and co-author of The Sopranos Sessions, in stores now. Our guest is Alan Sepinwall.
Hey, guys. Am I going to be able to follow everything that's happened on the podcast if I haven't been here since the pilot?
Probably. No, it's the same. Just imagine, just extrapolate the pilot to the rest of the other episodes of the podcast, and you're pretty much there.
All right, yeah. Good. Good.
Like, remember, how there was like a lot of like musical drops and bumpers and weird edits and whatnot. It's that, but worse. It's more of that.
Matt made me rename the Wayback Machine the Remember When Machine, but I think you get it. It's the same thing.
So yeah. The whole podcast is still the lowest form of discourse. I got it.
Yes, okay. Yes, exactly. Yes. The lowest of the low form of Sopranos discourse. You know, I mean, just compared to everything else you have probably done, Alan, regarding the Sopranos, this is, we're talking broad. We are going broad, because that's what we do here. Yeah. And so, Alan, this is your second time on. Since the last time you were on The Sopranos.
Since you've been gone. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, it's good. Go sing a song.
No, that's, yeah. Well, I was just giving you an idea for a later audio drop, because I know you like those.
Yeah, sometimes I add them in post, but rarely.
Since you've been gone, I can't breathe all the time.
You will respect me.
So, Alan, since the last time you were on, we actually we had another bit that we started doing called corrections from the previous episode, where people like wrote in to correct us, and you actually were able to get us one of those from the main man himself. It was David Chase actually gave us a correction, and I forget what it was about. It was about how we pronounced something.
Yeah, it was a Neapolitan dialect correction.
Right. And I guess the question I had about that, and I've been wanting to ask this for a long time now. Did David Chase actually listen to the podcast?
I don't know. We have sort of a relationship that's often at a distance. So sometimes we communicate, sometimes not. You know, I think right now he's like buried in work on the movie.
Sure.
So, you know, he has not emailed me in a while, but like I will sometimes very randomly get a message from him about something I wrote or some appearance I did. I'm like, wait, why was David listening to this, or why was David doing this? So sometimes he has a lot of time on his hands, and sometimes none at all. When I was at Sopranos Con, someone who works for him was there, like sort of just taking photos for him and telling him like what was going on, even though he himself pretty wisely decided not to go.
Yeah, no, that was, I think, a smart decision on his part not to go, but to watch from afar. But I mean, just based on that alone, it seems like there's a chance that David did listen to this podcast. And
it is entirely possible, yes.
Which, if David, if you're listening now,
stop.
Hey, what's up? If you got any,
stop listening now.
Stop listening now.
I don't need that kind of scrutiny in my life.
Yeah, and also if you like have a couple extra roles for like a Jew and another meaty Italian man in your movie, I'm not sure if you're done filming yet. I saw some stills. They look good, but they look like they're missing a couple of podcasters who could show up in the 70s. We could be radio guys or something. They, you know, just throwing it out there, you know?
Yeah. We'll just be in the background eating a slice of pie.
Yeah. What's the deal with Nixon? You hear about this Watergate thing?
I'm just saying, you know, we're
G. Gordon Liddy. Gee, this guy's shitty, right?
I don't think the FCC would approve of that, Vince.
No, that's true.
Hey, it's not TV. It's HBO. Did they ever do that? They should have done that. Anyways, Alan, we're very excited to have you on because today is the season finale of The Sopranos season 3, which means it's the season finale of this podcast. And before we get into talking about the season finale, as we do every podcast, it is time to play the theme song. Nope.
There we go. Hold on. All right. Got it.
Very close.
Pod. Your mama always said you'd be the chosen pod. Pod. Podcast. Pod. 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 Podcast. All right, ladies and gentlemen, today we're talking about from season 3, episode 13 of The Sopranos, and it is called Army of One. Is it called Army of One or The Army of One?
It's called Army of One.
Just Army of One. And this episode premiered May 20th, 2001. Vince, can you break us off a little bit of the synopsis?
In the season 3 finale, yet another academic misstep by AJ forces his parents to contemplate military school. Tony orders Ralph to deal personally with the Jackie Jr. situation, and later seems to take Ralph's side in a money dispute with Polly. Once again, the family gathers in Artie Bucco's restaurant, where Meadow reflects on being a soprano.
Yeah, they really, they soft-sold all of those things. the academic misstep was stealing a test, getting expelled, and also was like pissing on a radiator. He and Egon did that. And then you've got Meadow reflects on being a soprano. She mostly gets drunk and yells at people, but that's essentially what happens in this episode. Before we get into that, though, what was going on, Vince, at the time that this episode was released?
Oh, did you need cultural context for this?
I sure did,
yeah,
Vince.
Yeah, we do need that. And, you know, for that, we go to the Remember When machine. Walk, walk, daddy, daddy, bop, bop, shoo, bop.
Remember then, remember. Remember when it's the lowest form of conversation.
So May 20th, 2001. On this day, there was actually an interview in the New York Post with Nicholas Pileggi, who wrote Goodfellas, and they're asking him about The Sopranos. And this is what he said. The Sopranos is one of the great creations of popular culture during the last 30 years. David Chase has taken TV to a whole new level. He's made a leap on the same scale that Marty Scorsese made with Raging Bull. Everything is complex, Pileggi gushed. It's the great one-liner, the gun, and then an even better one-liner. What is most original about The Sopranos, Pileggi says, is that it combines daytime soap operas with the mafia genre. It combines intimate family dysfunction involving sex and a therapist with the classic themes of mob movies, revenge, the double cross, and constant jeopardy.
Yeah. No, so, that's...
Yeah.
I think that's pretty astute analysis on his part. Those are all the things I enjoy about Sopranos, you know? Soap opera, a little bit of psychoanalysis, and then, you know, just a bunch of Italians in see-through socks being a bunch of badasses.
Yeah, yeah. Another headline from the Post that day, will Pearl jam or will moviegoers...
Oh, no.
Or will moviegoers harbor reservations about this big budget extravaganza? That was a Lou Luminick headline, classic, and it's about whether the $140 million that Jerry Bruckheimer and Michael Bay spent on Pearl Harbor will turn out to be a good decision or a bad decision.
And, well, to be honest, I actually don't know whether or not that movie made money. I know it was bad. I remember it being bad. But yeah. did it do well?
I think it also flopped for the most part. I don't feel like researching this one fully, but I feel comfortable in saying enough. That without looking it up.
I guess Pearl didn't jam.
No, Pearl did not jam. I think that's the last time you can use a Pearl jam pun in a headline and have it be like relevant or current. Also, on that day, May 20th, 2001, Destiny's Child released Bootylicious.
Oh, wow. Nice. Man.
Landmark day.
It really is. Like, you forget.
For booty acceptance.
You forget how young Beyonce was, you know, when she started. The fact that now she's like, you know, I don't even know how old she is. She could be,
actually 12 years old when that came out.
I mean, right? It feels like it. It's like, because she feels like now if you were asked, how old's Beyonce? I'd be like 32? I don't know. Like, I have no clue.
Yeah, she's been 32 for 25 years.
She's been bootylicious her entire life, and God bless her.
Bootylicious-ness defies numbers.
Yes, it does.
So Shaq and Kobe beat the Spurs in game one of the Western Conference Finals the night before.
Yeah.
And then on page one of the LA Times, there was a story about Chandra Levy, which was, I had memory hold that one.
God, the name sounds familiar. Chandra Levy.
Yeah, she had been having an affair with a congressman, Gary Condit, and then she was found dead. And everybody suspected Gary Condit, and he lost his reelection. And then in like 2011 or something, they caught some Salvadoran guy who had attacked two other women in the park, and he got convicted of it. But it sent me down this like Gary Condit rabbit hole, because I was like, Gary Condit, what the hell happened to that guy?
How's he doing?
Some notes from my rabbit hole. After his departure from office, Condit moved to Arizona, where he operated two Baskin-Robbins ice cream stores with his wife and son.
Oh, boy.
When the franchise failed, Condit was ordered to pay the company $98,000 in a breach of contract proceeding.
Oh, my God.
In 2012, he was reported to be serving as president of the Phoenix Institute of Desert Agriculture, which listed its status as dissolved in the last corporate filing as of June 4th, 2015. He is currently a registered lobbyist with the state of California. And then it has a bit on his descendants.
What do you think he's lobbying for?
Oh, I don't know.
Deserts? I'm not really sure what. I mean, maybe he's lobbying for like a 33rd flavor at Baskin-Robbins.
In 2012, Condit's son, Chad, announced his intention to run for the House of Representatives as an independent. He lost in a top two election, blah, blah, blah. And then his grandson, Cooper, which is spelled C-O-U-P-E-R.
Come on. You can't. You can't do that.
Well, I guess we could call it. Does that mean it's cooer?
Yeah. Is that like you just named them a verb? I do not understand. Come on.
Cooper or Cooer Condit was appointed to the Series Planning Commission, that's placed outside Modesto, and was denied reappointment in 2020 by the council. In 2018, Condit's other grandson, Chance Condit, and that's Chance with two N's.
Unbelievable.
Oh my God.
Unbelievable. You guys are trying to convince people, like you're trying to, you know, like just claw your way back into the limelight. So you name all your kids misspelled names.
He was appointed to Chance ran unopposed for District 1 Series City City Council. And then he also has a nephew named Buck, which is ironically the most normal name in the
family.
That's
the normalest name.
Yeah.
Wow. You know.
So that's how Gary Condit is doing after he was.
That's how the Condit family is.
After he finally is out from under the cloud of suspicion that he was under for his political career. Oh,
I think he was out of the cloud of suspicion as soon as 9/11 happened. Like, my memory was erased from like all the old kind of like political scandals and whatnot. Like, you just forgot all. Like, I didn't remember Gary Condit at all until you brought him up. Wow.
Top movies: Shrek.
Hell yeah!
First weekend for Shrek, The Mummy Returns, and A Knight's Tale. Cool. Song still All for You by Janet Jackson, and It's Been a While from Stained was the number one rock song until like September of that year, which is sad. Sad comment.
Not a good
on the
year
times.
For music.
No, it wasn't.
You know, it's like I feel sad at this being the last episode of the season because of the fact that like if the season were to keep going, we could continually just name drop Stained, It's Been a While. For 20 weeks the American people were just hypnotized by those sweet, sweet guitar sounds, and we're like, man, it has been a while. Like, that was those were the days,
you know,
man.
You know, Matt, this was the first like big hiatus the show took between seasons 3 and 4. So when they came back for season 4, it had in fact been a while.
Yeah, I promise, will not be taking as long of a hiatus as The Sopranos did between seasons 3 and seasons 4. So anyone who's going to like, you know, write to us every week for the next 3, 4, 5 weeks, like, when are you coming back? I promise we'll be coming back. And now it is time to talk about this episode. This episode, once again, is called Army of One. Vince, you read the synopsis,
sure,
but
did.
I, of course,
oh, you got the Bada B stories?
I have my own synopsis. It is the Bada B stories.
I really hope you didn't make them rhyme this week, because, whew, I hate that.
Well, you know, just hope in one hand and shit in the other, Vince, as they say. I don't know why they say it. Never really understood.
See which
that,
one fills up first.
Yes, but because I did, and the Body B stories are as follows. When AJ steals a test and Jackie's laid to rest, that's B story. When Nucci sees Green Grove, but Polly needs more sclerol, that's B story. Jackie rings, ding-a-ling-a-lings, ding-a-ling-a-lings, but Tony leaves him hanging. AJ's expelled because he fucking fell for the principal's lie about DNA testing. This keeps going. When Tony gets brochures, Junior's cancer is cured. That's B story. When Meadow seems to whine because she's had too much wine, she's a drunk. When Vito shoots Jackie on behest of Ralphie, that's B story. Scusa me, but Tony laments AJ's bad genes. That's B story. Thank you. Thank you.
That was a pity clap, but yeah, you'll take it.
I actually didn't pick up the claps on the Zoom on this end, so whew, that felt like bombing. Yeah. So let's get into it. General thoughts about this episode, Vince?
Yeah, I think it's got a lot of good moments that I remembered. I think it ends weird. It's very scattered, like they're kind of... I find that David Chase is maybe not so good at endings, and this is like our first glimpse of it at the end of this episode. I don't know. Maybe that's too much of a broad statement, but definitely...
Well,
the,
of course, if David is listening, what we mean is you're great at endings and everything that you do.
Everything that you do is great.
We love you.
We love you and
we
your
appreciate
family
you.
And come on the show. No, but it's great. And then I think they just kind of didn't know how to end it, and it fizzled out in a weird way, but I don't think that really takes away from so many of the good things about it, I'll say.
It doesn't take away from the season, but... Alan, I was reading The Sopranos sessions, and you pointed out something that I completely agreed with in terms of this being the final episode, which was that kind of the best storylines that came out of the season, like your Ralphie story arc or your Gloria story arc, kind of got wrapped up, at least Gloria's, in the previous episode. So this one was wrapping up the story of Jackie Jr., which I think we can all agree Jackie Jr.'s presence on the show was received tepidly, I think, by everyone.
I mean, I think he's kind of meant to be received tepidly.
Yes.
Like, maybe you think initially, especially because the first time we see him is at the end of season two when he's with Richie, mm-hmm. like, oh, this kid's going to be a problem. But very quickly, it's, no, he's a joke. He pisses yeah. himself when he's helping rob the Rutgers fundraiser with Chrissy. He can't play Scrabble. He can't do anything. He's right. just completely inept. He does that whole, like, thing with Matouche where he gets Matouche's legs broken.
Right.
So, like, I mean, he's basically, like, he's an embarrassment. He's trying very badly to imitate his dad and to imitate Tony, and it doesn't work. And so he's, like, not the most dynamic or exciting character.
Yeah.
And so you have this issue which, like, Gloria was great, but Gloria gets essentially written out in the previous episode.
Mm-hmm.
So this is, I like Army of One as an episode. When I went back to revisit it for the book, I wound up liking it more than I think at the time.
Mm.
Because I think it works well as an episode. It's not a great finale.
Right.
Yeah. There were better stories elsewhere in the season, and they're mostly taken care of. And so it's just Jackie Jr. And then something that the show didn't usually do in its finales, which is there's a bunch of setup for season four. Because, you right. know, we're meeting Agent Cicerone, Johnny Sack approaches Paulie. There's a bunch of stuff that they then wouldn't pay off until they came back like a year and a half later.
Right. They're doing a lot of setup work. And, you know, setup work is not necessarily cathartic in terms of it being a good finale. It's just, it's a teaser for the next one, which is fine. I thought yeah. Jackie Jr. worked brilliantly as a character. I think his whole purpose is to sort of
yeah.
be a cautionary tale for AJ, this guy who is not street smart enough to be a gangster and maybe also kind of a pussy, but also too dumb to make it in the straight world too. So he's sort of caught in between. And, you know, I was actually yeah. surprised in the moment when we learn that Jackie Jr. gets killed, that Tony didn't like beat AJ over the head with it. Like, hey, I mean, he pointed it out. He's like,
yeah, he points it out.
He just says, you see? And he kind of yeah. underplays it, which I was surprised about. Like, that seemed like it was, you know, an opportunity for a big lecture from Tony. But I like the way they did it, nonetheless.
I mean, I almost feel like the reason it wasn't a big lecture is because Tony is not about to get into, like, a real conversation about the dangers of right. crime with his son. Because that seems like, especially the AJ of this episode. The AJ yeah. of this episode talks back more, I think, than I've ever seen him talk back. So much so that he gets slapped across the face yeah. by Tony.
I mean, so, okay, before we move on from Jackie Jr. real quick, I just wanted, I wanted to point out that I really liked what they did with him, which is that they made him likable at like 2 seconds before he gets killed. Like, he was kind of like yeah. a prick this entire time, and then now he's kind of remorseful, and he's having this nice relationship with Omar and his daughter playing uh-huh. chess. And then they're like, oh yeah, see how we created this cute little dynamic? We're gonna have him shot in the back of the head by a fat guy, which I thought was wonderful. That was maybe like a harbinger of things to come from HBO.
Yeah, I think in general, like, post-mortem on Jackie literally is after like doing this rewatch, I have realized that everything that I didn't like about Jackie and the Jackie Jr. storyline in general, and even like the acting earlier when I first saw it, I realize now was pretty intentional and ended up doing kind of the exact job you wanted it to do, which is that every time he's on screen, you're groaning at him because he's just so inept and he's so bad. And it's like watching him, number one, trying to be a gangster when he's clearly like the biggest pussy in the room of any like individual room that he's in. But then also like watching the kind of classic Fail Son story arc of somebody who is like, he can't get it together enough to like stay in school. He wants to be a badass, but he's also like, what if I got into men's fashion? Like, he's the Sopranos has done a really great job of like making like showing all the classic traits of fail sons. Like when later in the series you've got AJ wanting to be a what was it, like a party planner, it was an event planner.
Yeah, wants to be an event planner. He wants to be Donald Trump's helicopter pilot. There's a whole bunch of different career paths he explores.
And these are like career paths, and this includes men's fashion. It's like these are career paths that like rang so true to me for like people that I knew growing up who like, because I went to a public school, but I went to a public school in the west side of LA, so we had some people whose parents were like in the industry and whatnot, and like they wanted their kids to go to a quote normal school, right? So like these were rich kids going to a public school, and they all had no plan for like what they wanted to do with their lives or any interests in anything in particular, but they loved to party, and they were like, there's got to be a way to monetize this. So they would so it was, you know, like they liked men's fashion because they liked men's fashion, you know what I mean? Like they wanted to get they liked wearing good clothes, so they were like, what if this was my job? Like, it's kind of perfect. And you feel bad for Jackie because unlike most fail sons who are like, they can just start being in their family business, you know, all of a sudden, you know, their dad is a, you know, Hollywood producer, and then you get Chris D'Elia, right? like instead, Jackie is too weak to actually carry on the family legacy.
I think my favorite thing about Jackie is that like he knows the roadmap of cutting corners, like the fake it till you make it thing where you try to manipulate other people, and you think you like make them think that you're something that you're not by sort of acting the part. But like the best thing about him is that like you can tell that he thinks he's acting the part, but nobody in the room believes it for a second. So
yeah,
he's like he's going through the motions of doing it, but it's not working in any way, and it's really enjoyable to watch.
Well, I mean, we knew he was doomed from the start when he disrespected the pizza parlor. Like once you've done that, there's nowhere to go but down.
Yeah, you got to respect the pizza parlor.
You gotta respect the pizza.
But yeah, no. But going to AJ, so like the first scene, where are they? They're like in the basement stealing.
They're in front of from what I can tell, they've hidden themselves on school property. I think outside, right? And they're waiting for the janitor.
They're in, like, the boiler room, I think.
Yeah, the boiler room. Maybe. Okay, so they're inside the school. So they've hidden themselves.
Like, I didn't know if pissing on the boiler or pissing on the radiator was like some sort of tried and true East Coast prank, because we don't really like have we don't have that stuff, so we're kind of like, oh, what's happening there, what's going
on? I think it's more like Sean Gismonte, like when he had to take a shit during the cat burglar heist. Yeah. It's just right. When you gotta go, you gotta go.
Okay, got it.
Yeah, that's true. It's this kind of like general sign of weakness, I think, that if your body starts demanding things of you when you're in the middle of doing crimes, it's just like a sign that you are weak. And so, of course, Egon goes and takes a piss. And then, of course, that means that AJ has to go. And then they break in.
Egon, very odd looking, by the way.
He's a weird looking kid. I mean, you know, he's a young kid. He's at that awkward age where most kids are weird looking.
True.
You know? So, anyways, Vince's take on that is that Egon's not hot enough.
He's a little weird looking. I don't know. Just sort of weird looking in a general kind of way, you know?
Yeah.
But Jackie Jr. is hot looking, and see where that takes him.
Yeah. That's true.
Well, being that's hot what ruins you is being good looking when you're junior high and high school. That'll screw up anyone's life.
Being good looking and having a cool dad, that spells death. You are definitely going to sell ecstasy to kids. Like, that's what that means. So let's start then with AJ's storyline, because for me, this is primarily an AJ episode in terms of like the storyline that I like the most.
Definitely, because... They Got My DNA was one of the like I didn't really rewatch The Sopranos like for probably 20 years, and that was definitely a line that I remember. I remember entire sequence like exactly.
Yes. So they steal a test, and then later they get called into the principal's office, and they're forced to confess in the most amazing way possible. I mean, you've got to hand it to this principal for knowing exactly how he's going to trick these two fucking morons into confessing. And I have a clip of that.
Both of you got 96% correct. Remarkable. If you cooperate now, it'll be easier later.
All we did was study hard.
I don't have to waste my time with you. It was both your urines that Mr. Lubomov spent 2 hours scrubbing. Your DNA was an exact match.
Oh, jeez.
He's the one who peed first. I didn't even have to pee till he did it. I could take another test. You could watch me.
Egon's crying is
oh jeez,
that's Emmy level fucking acting. That okay, is look, so good.
I have to say something in defense of my man Anthony Soprano Jr. here, which
oh
is,
please
okay, in the episode earlier this season with Lady Gaga where they mm-hmm. wrecked the pool, you see the local police like basically put on a CSI episode,
yes,
in order to track them down. So, like, he has some experience with overuse of local law enforcement resources to investigate his pranks. So, I can yeah. see him being primed to buy this particular ruse.
Yeah, no, it's definitely, like, again, he's a freaking 16-year-old, 15-year-old kid, you know? Like, and the idea that you could trace someone's DNA from urines, as the principal said, like... At 16, that does not sound that far-fetched. You're like, and in fact, I'm pretty sure that, you know, even like adults like Tony and people in his crew have said things like, oh, the things you can get from DNA these days. Like these guys are also afraid of DNA testing and whatnot. So to be fair, AJ is not a total idiot, and he doesn't fully confess in that scene. Yeah, basically all he confesses to is that he took a piss, and then he says he'll take the test again. Like I give him a pass.
He I mean, it sort of just underscores how inept he is and why Tony would believe that he can't ever be in the mob life, because, you know, like in Goodfellas, what's his name, little Henry, he's hanging out by the cab stand. He gets one bad report card, and the gang like throws the mailman in the oven to say, you don't bring another fucking report card to my house.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, AJ Soprano can't get away with anything. Like he confesses to throwing trophies in a pool, and then he can't even get away with cheating on one test because he's so dumb that he confesses and he thinks the principal got his DNA. So like clearly he's not cut out for this life of crime.
Yeah, he did also flip on Egon immediately. He did.
Oh, yeah.
So fair enough. So of course, AJ gets expelled, and I think one of my favorite, this isn't my favorite of the episode, but one of my favorites is Tony and AJ kind of having it out that leads to him getting slapped in the face. And I have a clip of that as well.
I work hard all day to pay for this 6,000 square foot house, big screen TVs, food on the table, video games, all kinds of scooters and bicycles, Columbia University. And for what? To come home to this?
Sucks to be you.
My God, Tony! This might be a cry for help.
No. No more fucking schools that coddle him. He's going to military school.
What?
That's right. I got some brochures.
You got school brochures?
Yeah, from Janice. She was going to send Harper there, but she didn't have the money, and it was too fucking late.
I'm not sending him away.
We're looking at those brochures.
I feel like that was, I'm not going to excuse child abuse, but I think if I was that age and I said that in that situation, I probably would have expected to get smacked...
Yeah,
well.
I think that is maybe the most warranted violence that you've seen on The Sopranos thus far. Like, it is definitely something to be expected when your mobster father is telling you about all of the things that he has done to make sure you have scooters.
all kinds of scooters and bicycles. I love that line.
Yeah, and then just to be like, sucks to be you, like that. Hand it to AJ. He's ballsy. He's ballsy. And in these select moments, he has, I guess, just like a little bit of bravery comes through, you know. And you almost respect it until, you know, he gets slapped and cries and whatnot. He's just never given the chance to spread his wings and fly when it comes to being a badass.
You know who else was a little shit when he was in junior high and got sent to military school, don't you?
You?
No, Donald Trump. Donald Trump went to like military, he got sent to military academy high school. Like Donald Trump is basically AJ Soprano, yes.
Oh shit, I did not know that. That definitely shines some light on it. I mean, I guess AJ really is just Donald Trump through and through, just like son of a more competent father.
He's AJ if AJ had a more coddling father. Because apparently the story was that Fred Trump was a huge asshole to Donald Trump's older brother, but let Donald get away with everything for whatever reason. Because he was like a headstrong prick. And at some point that came to a head. I forget what the inciting incident was. But yeah, Donald Trump had to go to military school. Which is funny because it's like, that's such a staple of, I don't know, what, like 80s television, telling a kid you're going to send him to military school?
Yeah. Yeah. It's something that, like, I'm sure still exists, but you never really hear about it. Like, there's not too many people I know who were, you know, they're like, oh, yeah, I went to, UC Irvine for college, and for high school, I was in military school. Like, you just don't hear about
that.
There's
no military school near where I grew up that I could be threatened with having to go to.
Yeah. Yeah. But you gotta feel bad for AJ, because once again, just like Jackie Jr., he's too incompetent for anything that comes his way, including like military school. And
the whole exchange where he's asking like what OFA, like where the guy from Saw gets through his whole spiel about like their schedule at the military academy, and AJ's question is like, what does 0530 mean again? And
he's, yeah, like,
5:30 a.m. Oh Jesus. Which, can you imagine having to get up at 5:30 a.m. every morning as a high school kid?
My favorite is when AJ comes down the stairs in the military school uniform, and Tony, who is making him go to this place, starts laughing at him. Like, that is the ultimate my father is a dick move right there. Like, I mean, come on.
It was very much shades of Bobby Bacala putting on his hunting outfit.
Tony just laughing at him as he's like forced him up, you know, late at night to put on this suit so he can help him find, Polly and Chris. And he's still going to laugh at him. Like,
maybe. I mean, guys, I know we're only at the end of season three, but so I may be going out on a limb here, but I'm going to suggest maybe Tony Soprano is not a nice guy.
I'm starting to see shades of that, Alan. I'm starting to think he might be like possibly a sociopath or just a meanie.
I don't know if I would go that far.
Yeah, no, he's just a meanie.
He's not nice.
Yeah. He's not nice. He's not a good man. I have a clip from when AJ shows up with his full school uniform on and has a breakdown.
Sergeant Bilko.
You look very handsome.
She's right, you do.
Yeah, right.
No, I'm serious. Tight suit like that, it shows off your lats.
You put on the hat?
No way.
Oh, please. We look so cute at the uniform company.
You're not going to sew the hat.
Let's put the hat on for your mother.
No.
What did you say? Now, look at that. I'm serious. You look very impressive.
Oh, my God, if I wasn't already married.
I look like a total jerk-off.
What, are you crying?
I don't want to go there.
You need toughening up.
Stand up straight, okay?
I'm standing fucking straight!
The tearfully crying, I look like a total jerk-off is so good, because you know, it's like he's clearly a nu metal teen, but has inherited is most of his father's vernacular nonetheless. And that's like, yeah.
Yeah. And I like that the hat is where he draws the line. Like he, like the hat he knows is the one thing that will turn this from just like looking like a school uniform to him looking like, weirdly enough, a pansy, which is a strange thing because it's supposed to be a military outfit. And I also love Tony threatening him to put on the hat, you know, where he's just like, what the fuck did you say? You're not going to put this hat on? You put the fucking hat on. And then immediately crying while wearing a military outfit.
Yeah. Well, because, you knew the breakdown was coming at some point.
Oh yeah. Yeah. But it's just, it is peak AJ to be mostly embarrassed that he looks stupid. And, you know, cause it's like, it's less that he is fearful of like being surrounded by, you know, people with guns or like being somehow a cog in the military industrial complex, or he has no ideological like aversion to being in military school. His big problem is he doesn't want to wake up early, and he
doesn't want to look stupid,
doesn't want to look like an asshole. And he's like, but what about my skateboard and my friends and my Marilyn Manson posters? Like, it's taking out of him, out of everything that he knows, everything that's cool and rad about him.
Yeah. We get a clear, clear glimpse into what his motivating factors are.
Then he faints.
Yeah. He faints. I also enjoyed first of all, like this whole episode, the acting between Tony and Carmela is pretty excellent throughout the whole thing. And they, you know, they get the thing that all actors love is to like scream at each other and land solid points in an argument. And I love that scene where Carmela's is going to go sleep on the couch and Tony beats her to it. And then he goes and he slams the door, but just to make sure that he's punctuated the point, he has to slam it like 7 times in a row, which feels like a very Tony move.
Well, what's worse is that like he is slamming it to make a point, but he is also frustrated that in his slamming of it, it does not close properly. So, but he will not give up trying to slam it to make the point, because what he really wants is one quick, loud slam, boom, and the door is closed and he moves on. But because...
I kind of wonder, like, I mean, Chase at Gandolfini's eulogy told the story about him... Gandolfini like slamming, I think it was a fridge door though, and like it wasn't scripted that he did it 7 or 8 times, but he did it that many times and he broke the fridge door and they had to cut and come back and fix it. But I wonder if he might have been talking about this now. I don't know.
Well, he did. He also breaks the fridge door in this episode too.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
Oh, he does.
Yeah, in the Lomain incident.
Oh man.
Which is brilliant, because I feel like that's the great thing about Tony is that he does have all of like a person's recognizable fears and idiosyncrasies. Mm-hmm. And like it's just a heightened gangster version of like the average suburban male's set of gripes with the world. And
it really is just like it's so relatable to check the fridge for that low main that you've been dreaming about for the entire ride over, and it's gone and blowing the fuck up.
Yeah.
It's like it's he's got suburban malaise plus mafia problems.
Well, there's a thing about becoming a suburban dad that is like you feel infantilizes you in some way, because it's like you go from having control of all the things in your fridge until now suddenly you're back to like sharing a house or space like with all these people, and then you turn into the guy who's like, where's my fucking lo mein, where's this, where's that, who moved my slippers, kind of thing. And maybe an hour ago I went and I was like, oh, I'm gonna make a couple eggs, and I go in the fridge and there's only one egg, and I'm like, god, son of a bitch. And it's like, and like you find yourself getting weirdly angry just because like you thought you had a thing, and then and then it's gone, and then you're like irrationally angry about it. The sound editors do such a good job on that show. Like, that was just like someone threw a desk down some stairs to get that sound effect. So I was like,
I've been dreaming of that fucking lo mein all the way the fuck over here. Now who came in here and ate my shit?
All the way the fuck over here. So good. I feel like he probably, that wasn't scripted that way, but he, you know, he added a few fucks here and there.
Yeah. No, I mean, you know, he's a professional actor. You know?
Brilliant. Brilliant man.
Oh, man.
And then Polly does this, you know, T, not for nothing. You seem like you're wound a little tight lately.
I mean, you're screaming about a lo mein right now. we got some murders to plan. It's a great scene just because I relate very, very much to expecting food and yes. not getting the food I expected and
it's
being
so
like
stupid and asinine.
Someone needs to die.
But really, it makes you angrier than anything else. Just the idea of having your heart set on one food for like more than an hour and then being denied that one food for some reason, it turns you into like a 2-year-old.
It happened
time.
To me today. I went to get takeout for lunch for the whole family and they messed up the order. Oh. And I'm like, I'm not going back, like taking another 20 minutes to go there and back. I'm just going to eat whatever crap they gave us. And I was so like, you didn't want to be around me.
Yeah. You're just like, you're grumpily eating. You're shoving it into your mouth. Like, son of a fart.
Yeah.
Bastard.
I hate this now.
So Tony is all of us and then the, you know, except for beating your kids, but he right. just reacts a little more strongly than the rest of us.
And we do not see Tony like constantly doing physical violence on his family or at least on his kids. You know, and even Carmella, you know, you don't see him getting physical. And as someone who was in a family where there was like spanking and the occasional slap, I look at that slap and I go like, that was a warranted slap.
Right.
That is a slap.
I feel
that
like most people like you, I don't know. My experience was like, that was definitely not a regular thing, but like maybe once or two times through childhood, I said something I really shouldn't have and got a smack for it. And you're like, I don't know. You're kind of like, yeah, that made sense. I would not try to do that myself, but I can definitely see that, I don't know.
AJ deserved that slap.
Yeah.
That's my hot take for this episode. AJ deserved that slap. And apparently, that slap led to, reawakening something in his genetics and he fainted, although he has fainted before. And, summertime and the living is thirsty again. Once again, I've done that joke. And once again, it's a great joke.
Very funny, Matt.
Thank you.
But you're right. It is summer. And during the summer, I love to keep Fiji water on hand to keep my family and me hydrated and refreshed.
Here's the thing about Fiji water. It really is from the islands of Fiji.
You're a liar.
No, I swear to God, it actually is. Drop by drop, Fiji water collects in a sustainable, ancient, artesian aquifer 1,600 miles away from the nearest continent, protected and preserved naturally from external elements. But I'm always wondering, Vince, how does Fiji water taste so good?
That's such a good question. And the answer is that as the water filters through volcanic rock, it collects a unique profile of electrolytes and minerals, resulting in more than double the electrolytes as the other two top premium bottled water brands, giving Fiji water its signature soft, smooth taste. You know, yesterday I happened to take my son to California's largest water park, and you know, it's hot out, the sun's beating down, you're carrying a toddler around, you get thirsty.
Sure do.
And you know what I did?
What?
I reached a meaty paw out for that natural artesian spring water that comes only from Fiji.
That's right. That's right. And listen, I enjoy Fiji water on a hot day. I enjoy Fiji water on a cold day. I enjoy Fiji water on a medium day. Just basically whenever I'm thirsty, I reach for a nice bottle of Fiji water.
I know your mouth gets dry when you're trying to do those royalty freestyles sometimes.
It does. It does. I have a very dry mouth. People have commented on that. And I like to wet it with the Fiji water. And here's the thing, Vince. Unlike some other premium bottled water, Fiji water's electrolytes are 100% naturally occurring.
That's like the best kind of electrolytes. And this water even has a perfectly balanced pH of 7.7.
Fiji water really is Earth's finest water. And since 2022, its 330 milliliter and 500 milliliter bottles have been produced in 100% recycled plastic, so you can feel proud of your choice in bottled water.
Get stocked up on Fiji water this summer and visit your local retailer to pick some up today for your next backyard party, beach or pool day, hike, or even your home office.
It's not just water, it's Fiji water.
This October, Tanger invites you to shop pink and save lives. Your donation of $10 or more to the Breast Cancer Research Foundation helps fuel innovative research that brings us closer to a cure. It also unlocks exclusive savings from brands like Coach, Crocs, Columbia Factory Store, and more to shop all month long. Join us as we mark 30 years of advancing research and empowering hope. Donate and access your exclusive savings today at Tanger.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Question for you. Would you rather pay $150 a month or $15 a month to work out with the same high-quality gym equipment? At Planet Fitness, you can get top-tier equipment for $15 a month. Plus, save $28 or more when you join now during our Strong Choice Sale. Our weights weigh the same, you just don't pay the same. Enjoy free fitness training and 24-hour access at most clubs, all in the judgment-free zone. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month, cancel anytime. Deal ends October 10th. See club for details.
And I do love the excuse that Tony has of his genetics being the family curse and the reason why anything like unfortunate has come upon him or his relatives in the past. Like he talks about a relative who like drove like a cart off of a road and died, and you know, he's like, it's probably, he probably fainted. And just like in general, he has this thing where he's hung up on his genes as being like this weakness that is ingrained in him. Yeah, it's ingrained, and
nothing you can do about it
except for go to therapy and you know, obviously take medication.
Nothing is ever his fault, guys.
No, it's his rotten fucking Sopranos genes, man.
Right. Rotten fucking putrid Sopranos genes. The putrid that sells it.
That's a great word.
It really is.
So another storyline in this, speaking of psychoanalysis, one of the storylines that I really enjoyed in this episode is Polly and his mom, where, you know, this is sort of setting up the idea that Polly's overextended, and so he's going to be, grouchy about money and gonna have some problems. But the reason is that, you know, he's taking his Nucci to live in Green Grove. And
is this the introduction of Nucci? Is this the first?
I think so.
This is the first Nucci episode.
And my favorite thing about Nucci is like she's clearly like the anti-Livia. Like she immediately
she's so happy to be at Green Grove. Yeah. She loves Green Grove. Yeah.
She sees people singing and she's like, oh, look, they're singing my favorite song. I can't believe you live, let me live in a nice place like this. And so she's clearly, I love that she is the opposite of Livia in every way. And you can sort of extrapolate what that has meant for Polly and Tony, respectively.
Yeah. And I have a clip of Nucci and Polly getting into Green Grove.
How do I open this door?
That's Sammy Kahn. That's one of my favorites.
We have an even bigger sing on Parisian night, which is Fridays.
Oh, Madonna me, they don't eat snails, do they?
Oh, no. Coq au vin, blanket of veal.
Wow. What's the matter?
My son lets me live in a place like this.
Aw.
He's such a good boy.
Yeah, well, who's the queen, huh? Come on now. Try those peeps.
It's funny because like Livia reminds me of my grandma in so many ways.
Yeah,
but then so does Nucci. So I feel like they're kind of together. They're kind of like the yin and yang of Italian grandmothers. And Nucci, it's funny because it's like the line reads are somehow. They're somehow stilted, but then they also work just because of her accent and voice and entire sort of persona.
Yeah, I mean, she is a brilliant comic actress. Know, and
oh my, like, me, they don't eat snails, do they?
And like, and also just like the idea of like her, she knows she's going into what she considers to be the fanciest place that her wonderful son can take her, and she's like, well, of course this probably means you serve escargot. Like, she's got this lovely like kind of, she's kind of trash, and she is, but you know, it's like this but she's this sweet old Italian trash that you just she's the opposite of Livia, so you love her. And her opening scene is the funniest shit ever, like just the like screaming at her son, how do I open this door? Like, she's just got like mid panic coming through her voice
because she's inside a car, and of course, you know, who could know how to open a car?
Oh, she's just such a fantastic character, and it's like like you were saying, it's this is a lot of setup, you know, this this season finale sets up a lot of storylines that we'll see, you know, in the next season and the next few seasons, and it sets up Nucci and Pauly's relationship and gives you this insight into Pauly where you'd almost expect like in a cliche way Pauly would be the one who has like a mean mother, you know, has Olivia, but then you see just like the fucking bizarro world Livia mother that Pauly has, and you go, oh, this actually makes more sense. This explains Pauly so much.
I mean, going back to Goodfellas, I feel like this is almost an established trope at this point where like the really crazy one, his only like real relationship with a human being is his mother, which is basically the same for Joe Pesci's character in both Casino and Goodfellas, I think, like where, you know, his mom wants him to settle down, but he's like, no, I'm good. I don't need, all of my other relationships in life are transactional. Like, I don't have a wife or a family. I just have a Gumar, a series of them, because, you know, I got this doting mother, and what else?
Yeah, I got my mom.
What else do I need in life?
Which is, it's kind of something also that, that Carmela says early on in a previous clip that we played that weirded me out, which was when she's looking at AJ all dressed up in his military outfit.
Oh, she wasn't already married.
And she's like, well, if I wasn't already married, it's like, wait, what? Finish that sentence. Like, there's this kind of, maybe it is just this trope of
I think that's just like a cutesy suburban thing, like the casual sexualization of kids, and it has always creeped me out. Like, you know, when you give like a little kid like a toddler a shirt that says like Heartbreaker or something, like,
yeah,
all right, settle down, like let him be. like we don't need you to we don't need to sexualize your kid to for us to believe that he's a good kid. Like, just let him be a kid. I don't
see like a Heartbreaker shirt,
not like in a QAnon way, but just like that's the only value that like a person has.
Oh no, I get it, Vince. Yeah. This is your cuties.
Yeah, it is.
This is for you. You're like, this is Hollywood gone too far.
It's also my thing with like child actors in general. Like, I just the process, the process of people making their kids like postcard cute is just off-putting in general.
Yeah. So Pauly brings Nucci to Green Grove, and it's established that there's going to be a $40,000 deposit that he will get to the lady at Green Grove, you know, within the week. And it kind of, we learn that Pauly was involved in a small way, but in a meaningful way, in a heist that Ralphie and his crew pulled off, and Paulie wants half of the money. I think they said they netted about $100,000, and Paulie wants $50K. Ralphie does this great thing where he avoids talking about it by having Vito pretend to be Tony calling him. You get to see a little bit of Vito Spadafore shine in this moment.
Yes, and two great scenes in this episode, which is that one. I like the casual comedy of him just describing things while Ralphie plays the other side of the phone call. And then later, or I don't know, I think it's before, when he shoots Jackie Jr. and it just...
No, that was later.
It just takes him an excessively long time to get into the car because he's so fat. brilliant. Like the slowest a person has ever got into a car after shooting another person in the head is that scene.
Can I get my Jersey nerd on here for a second?
Oh, please. Please do.
All right. So we are told that Jackie Jr. is hiding out in the Boonton Projects.
Mm-hmm.
Boonton is the town literally next to the town I grew up. On one side was Caldwell, where Tony lives, where David Chase grew up. Yeah. On the other side was Boonton. Like, it is, there are no projects in Boonton. It is a well-to-do suburb. Later on, when Vito flees to New Hampshire and they need to, like, film the main street of this quaint New Hampshire town, that's Main Street in Boonton. Like,
what?
The diner is right next door to where I bought my comic books when I was growing up. It's, like, not in any way a place where, like, Ray Ray and his daughter would be living and playing chess, and Vito would come up and just shoot him in the back of the head.
Yeah, another thing that I loved about that is that, like, Jackie Jr. is so stupid that he can't actually even flee. Like, how hard is it to flee town? Like, you know the mob is after you. Go somewhere else. But he somehow gets a friend to set him up, like, in the town next door from the guy.
Well, he gets another idiot friend, because, like, this guy is entire, like...
They'll never catch me if I hide out with the black guy.
Yeah, he's like... Yeah. His entire network is other idiots and other idiot fail sons and like, you know, other mafiosos in training. So, like, half of their, you know, knowledge about things like finding a safe house and whatnot is probably gleaned from watching television, and they're like, yeah, you hide out with some black guys over here. And like, the idea, first of all, Alan, why is there a reason then why they decided to make the Boonton Projects a thing?
I don't know. I don't think we ever talked about that. I think, like, I brought it up in one of the interviews we did with Chase for the book, and then we just kind of laughed, but I was not sharp enough to say, how dare you impugn the good name of Boonton, New Jersey, David? Yeah. I think there were definitely some times where they just chose the names of nearby towns. I think David mentioned, like, there was a place he liked to go there to eat, too, and that's why it came up. So sometimes, like, the geography of the show is not very realistic, and sometimes it's incredibly realistic, like when Meadow runs out of Vesuvio and goes and runs across Bloomfield Avenue and nearly gets hit in traffic.
Yes.
Like, I worked at a bank next to whatever storefront they were using as the Vesuvio exterior as one of my summer jobs in high school.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's... Some things they get exactly right, and some things they just stretch on because it's fun to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's get into Meadow now, because, you know, I think this episode is mainly her arc for the most part.
Okay.
Because, you know, she's acting out because Jackie Jr. has been killed. And then, you know, she's telling off Carmella, saying it was probably, you know, some mafia guy. And then Carmella has, like, her big grandstandy speech where she's like, how dare you impugn the good name
I love it. I love that
Americans.
Yeah, I love that both Meadow and Carm, like, first of all, Meadow and Carm's relationship in this episode is so toxic and so real that it triggers me in a sense where you've just, like, if you've ever had to deal with my sister, then, like,
family women family members in an argument, I think, would
where you're like, you know, at one moment, you know, she's Meadow is arguing that like Jackie was killed because of the family circumstances that we are currently in. You know, we are so connected to crime, and that's probably why he died. And then Carmella is like, you know, does Carmella gets woke and is like, wow, just because, you know, people have Italian last names, that all of a sudden, you know, people think that everything was a mafia hit. That's really problematic of you. And
that's like her version of the Jack Nicholson speech in A Few Good Men. It's like, secretly, you want me on that wall. You need me on that wall. Or it's like the, or Scarface. It's like, you want to make me the bad guy because you can say there's the bad guy. That's like Carmella.
You need people like me. Yeah,
that's Carmella doing that.
To point your fucking finger and say there, that's well, I mean, it's the mafia. Sorry.
No, it's just, it's an episode about denial. Like, everyone's in denial about everything. And so she, like, briefly, like, she's so shocked by Jackie getting killed that for 5 minutes she's able to sort of speak the truth about who her dad is and what everybody does.
Yeah.
But, like, if she wants to stay in the family, she can't do that. So
right.
She tells herself to then chew out, like, you know, Jackie's sister for talking about it in front of a cousin or something.
Yeah,
no, she quickly, so she quickly learns how to be in denial from Carmella, which is great. Like, you can see her, the wheels turning, where she's learning, like, oh, this is something we all know, but we don't acknowledge. And then later, when Meadow is with her cousin, or not her cousin, but with Ralphie's, Jackie Jr.'s sister, and then
and their cousin.
My favorite thing about that scene is that basically Meadow is mafiaing Jackie's sister while denying the existence of the mafia. Like, she uses she uses her own mob leverage to tell the friend to shut up, because she's basically. She like has this whole speech and everybody's kind of like, what the fuck are you talking about? And then at the end she goes, how dare you say this in front of an outsider? Which is basically she is playing the mafia card while denying the existence of the mafia, which is fantastic.
Yeah. And I have a clip of that scene. It's called Meadow Discovers Angle.
That's like her whole character. I love it.
Yeah. My brother's whole stupid, pathetic dream was to follow in our father's footsteps. What, I gotta paint a picture? He was killed by some fat fuck in see-through socks. Take your pick, they all look alike.
Actually, Kelly, you really have no basis to say that.
We used to joke around about our families. What happened to you?
Okay, I know this is a really painful time for you, but... Your brother's best friend was an Israeli ex-sealer. I met him.
Wow, so it was international.
Let's just drop it, okay?
Yeah, right. I mean, if my dad still controlled all the crime in North Jersey like your dad does now, I'd probably want to drop it too. But then, it might not have happened.
Wait, this is way beyond. Our dads are in the garbage business, and it's always good for a laugh, and yeah, they brush up against organized crime. But you think they control every slime ball and illegal gun in like 100 communities? The fact that you would even say this in front of an outsider is amazing to me. Jesus Christ, some loyalty?
Yeah.
Meadow lives say, well, actually. And I feel like if the real Meadow were here today, she would be starting a lot of reply tweets with and then whatever her point was.
Yeah, she'd be like head of the Italian Anti-Defamation League.
She'd be like, head of like the Italian faction of the K-Hive, where she would be starting a lot of tweets with actually.
Yeah, I just like Meadow kind of I agree completely the way that she is able to completely deny the existence of like the mafia, or like basically lessen it to a point where it's like, oh, this is not even a factor, and then be like, have some loyalty to the Don. Like, I must be loyal to my capo.
She's like, doing this like this transparent phoniness with just a hint of plausible deniability, where like you know, it's like, oh, she might actually believe what she's saying, but probably not.
Well, so it's like, it feels like a little bit of what Carm was saying kind of like got through to her. Yes. And in a situation in which Carm isn't there, she feels free to take on that role. But then immediately, she has another scene with Carmella where – she is in the car and they are just like she's trying to explain her feelings about what's going on with Jackie, and her mom is basically just trying not to upset her and trying to agree with her, and she just freaks out at her mother again. I have a clip of that as well.
They let him do whatever he wanted. I mean, you would ask him, like, aren't you afraid what your parents are gonna say about, I don't know, whatever? And he would just go, they don't give a shit. But I think it hurt his feelings inside.
Well, I'm glad you see.
You're glad I see. What you take from this is an excuse to get intrusive and controlling. That is not what I'm talking about. Jesus!
What did I say? Meadow, you are out from under our roof.
AJ, then, you'll use it against him.
Against him?
I'm sorry I said anything.
This is literally a situation which Carmela cannot win because, right. Number one, Meadow is sad. Number two, she's drunk. And number three, she is trying to process the fact that, like, her ex-boyfriend was definitely murdered. Probably her father had something to do with it. And she just can't, you know, she doesn't know how to express that without yelling at her mom, who is in the family the safest person to yell about. So this all leads to Jackie Jr.'s wake, which is the end of the episode. And Jr. is there at Vesuvio, and it's a pretty empty wake, which is sad because it's like it's also a pretty empty funeral. And it's just because of the fact that the Super Bowl is happening.
Yeah.
All of the mafia is too busy to work to
great
give
touch.
A shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just to give a shit about the death of Jackie Jr. And it's like, it's sad, but there's something about Rose kind of like being resigned to the fact that, oh, I know there's actually a perfectly normal mafia reason why no one's here to mourn the death of my son, and it's betting is happening.
Meanwhile, Junior has sort of taken the Office Space hypnosis where he has, you know, had a near-death experience, and now he kind of doesn't care anymore, which is
yeah,
it's great.
And Junior at Vesuvio is able to sum up the entire character of Jackie Jr. in just like a few sentences. And I do have a clip of that. It is Junior calls Jackie stupid at his wake.
Sad day.
Mm-hmm. Kid was always a dumb fuck though, wasn't he? Didn't he almost drown in 3 inches of water?
The penguin exhibit. Jack tried to lay off all Jackie's problems on a learning disorder, but... Well, stupidity would be a learning disorder, wouldn't it?
I love those things where, like, the writers give you a punchline with no joke. Like, they make yeah. reference to the penguin exhibit.
Yeah.
And something happened where he almost drowned. And I don't know what it is, but it's really funny in my mind that I'm connecting the two somehow.
Yeah, it is, like, the world building that gets done in just kind of these offhanded quips, these, like, little jokes, is, it's just so vibrant. Like, it could, because the penguin exhibit almost drowning, like, I don't know what happened, but I do know what happened. Because mm-hmm. I can see a little Jackie Jr. accidentally, like, trying to get into the penguin exhibit because he wanted to play with the penguins, and then he falls in the moat, and then... almost dies just trying to play with the penguins because he's a dumb fuck.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was written, you know, that he would be a dumb fuck. It was written in his genes, in his blood, in his life story. This dumb fuck was going to die one way or the other. And yeah, it's tragic all the more because of the fact that people were going like, well, yeah, this was expected, you know?
Yeah. So do we want to sum this one up with favorite, least favorite?
Yeah, let's do that. Alan, do you have like a favorite scene or a least favorite scene?
I mean, I don't love Junior singing that it goes on as long as it does, but like I kind of get the point of it, and it's also there to drive Meadow nuts. But I think that's part of what I get into, and like when I say that it's a good episode, maybe not the best finale the show did.
Yeah,
like this is the last time you're going to see the show for a very long time, and it's Dominic Kinney's, who has a lovely voice,
mm-hmm.
but he's just singing Italian song for, you know, what seems like forever.
Yeah, yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Yeah,
they also, that's also my least favorite, where they sort of, I mean, they, the outro is him singing the song, and then they, like, dub it with songs in other languages. And that's, like, a thing that... I feel like that's a classic mistake. That's, I call it a mistake. People can call it what they want, but I think there's this mistake that people make where they want whatever their story is to be universal, and so they like make it like they try to do this overt illusion, like, no, see, the Italian song is just like a Chinese song, which is just like a Spanish song, because all yeah. we all sing songs, right? And I feel like I feel like people, if you make something specific and detailed enough, everybody will yeah. find something universal in it, and that's why it's good.
Yeah, it's like, called being broad.
Yeah, the thing that you don't do is like make this artificially broad. It's kind of the same thing that Spike Lee does at the end of Malcolm X, where it's like he's just done this great movie. Probably like one of his best movies, and then he ends it with like a group of school children saying like, I am Malcolm X, and it's like, yeah, we just got that from the movie that you just made, like, you don't have to do yeah. this weird
yeah,
you don't have to That's like true. Do yeah. try to be the critic of your own movie at the end.
Yeah, like, Spike Lee did that too with the end of Black Klansman, where they like show Charlottesville at the end, and it was like, yeah, I know.
Yeah, yeah.
That was like last year. Yeah. Yeah, that was the whole... That's kind of half the reason that I watch this movie. I get it. But yeah, so for me, I would have to say my favorite scene would be Lo Maine. But my least favorite, I have to agree with you. It's like the four songs ending. Especially given that song, it's Cor Ungrato. Is that what it's called?
I don't know.
Yeah, Ungrateful Heart.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, it's actually like this really beautiful song in the original Italian. And they do a good job of it, but it's like, it goes on a little bit too long. I agree. But I found this recording of it. God. Yeah. And I just want to play a little bit of it because it's a beautiful song.
Okay.
This is a rare recording uh-huh. that I found.
Yeah.
You know, like I found it in the back of a record store. Uh-huh. Vince, I don't know why you're sighing. I found a rare recording of a beautiful song.
Okay. Well, I'd like to hear it. I just want to hear it. I'm just impatient to hear the song is all I guess.
And I would like to play a clip of it. Okay. Yeah, I've got it. It's called Core Original Version.
Finish your brajo.
No, this is not me, it's the original.
Okay. Jesus.
All right, well, you know, you get it. That's you don't need to.
Oh, I very much get it. Yes.
Yeah, so
there's like 15 more seconds of that, but
You know, that's I think that's the song. You know, I found it again, like I said, old record store, and I was just like, "Oh, what a beautiful song." And yeah, as someone who's not Italian, you know, I gotta say, I don't know what those lyrics mean, but gabagool vaffanculo.
Yeah,
it just sounds.
You summed up our culture. You did it well.
It sounds like it's a beautiful song about a woman uh-huh. and love.
We haven't even talked about Cicerone, by the way. We can't go without getting into the Firouza Balk of it all.
Yeah, that's true.
Were you guys watching the show when it originally aired?
No,
I
wasn't watching it when this season. I started watching it in the fifth season when it originally aired.
It's funny because Cicerone means someone. It's like a beer version of a sommelier.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah, but yeah, that's her name. That's the hot FBI agent, right?
Right, but there's a story about Firouza Balk. originally being character? What,
okay, yeah, go for that. I want to hear that.
So, and like, that's why I asked if you'd seen it originally, because when it originally aired, Agent Cicerone is played by Fairuza Balk from The Craft.
I don't know if I saw it in time for it to see Fairuza Balk, but yeah.
Yes. And as happened a couple times on the show, they recast the role later. So when the show comes back for season four, it's Lola Glaudini as Cicerone, is the one you remember. But they did something they never did for any other time they recast a part, which is they went back and they reshot both of Fairuza Balk scenes in this episode. So like you have to go to YouTube to see any evidence of her as Cicerone. Hold on, I'm going to drop a link to a photo of her into the chat here.
Oh, please do.
They they Mandela affected her. They tried to they
wiped her off the map. Her.
Yeah, like the original father Phil is still in the pilot. Like there's a couple other characters. Yeah. Like, you know, Silvio's original wife is there before they cast Maureen Van Zandt. But like Fairuza Balk does no longer exist in The Sopranos.
So did they recast her because they didn't like her at her performance, or was she a pain in the ass on set?
That's one of several mysteries about the show I've never gotten a satisfying answer to. I think, you know, something obviously happened. I don't know what. I have no idea who was actually to blame, but they memory hold her and she's gone. And, you know, you can't, if you watch the DVDs, if you stream it anywhere, it's always Lola Glaudini. Yeah, you can't find it now.
I mean, I have to say, I did like Lola Glaudini in that role where, you know, she kind of walks in and everybody's like, you know, tucking in their stomachs. And then, you know, they have to turn her into a real Guido.
Yeah. And she does a good job of it. I mean, I do wonder what happened with Fairuza Balk. It could just be, you know, that they found a better agent Cicerone. I don't know. Who knows? Nobody knows. And at some point, Fairuza, if you were listening to this podcast, which I'm assuming if you were going to listen to any Sopranos podcast, it would be this one, mostly because we're the only one. This is an open invitation to come on and tell us what happened, because I would have loved to see you as that character.
I think she's off with the Russian.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, they're together in the Pine Barrens.
And that's somewhere. The other thing we did not even get into here, which is at the time this episode aired, like I was covering the show for the Star Ledger, so we had like the most insane of insane Sopranos fans, and everyone was convinced that the fucking Russian was going to come back in this finale, because why would they do it? Like, they'd sort of accepted, all right, he's not going to be there in Amorfu, but like they have to deal with the Russian here. This is where it's going to be. And instead, Junior sings his song, Meadow runs into traffic, the end. And everybody was so mad at the time.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, and I get it, because like it is an anticlimactic episode. I mean, for a season finale, it is anticlimactic. You don't really get any of the catharsis that you kind of wanted. Even Jackie's death, you kind of feel like, oh, they just kind of took care of that, you know? And I think you spend the rest of the series wondering when the Russian is going to come back. And which to me is kind of amazing. Like I respect it more, the fact that they just kind of let that go and let it be just kind of this running tension throughout.
Especially since like The Sopranos otherwise, like you said, it's not a show that leaves many open-ended storylines. It tends to open and close, at least, you know, up until this point, it's mostly finished arcs within episodes, and this one very much didn't.
Yeah.
There's another weird moment in this episode where Meadow uses the word perseverate, and I had to rewind that twice. I was like, what the fuck did she just say? Like, I went to Columbia word school, and I still I've never heard a person use perseverate in a sentence in real life before.
It was definitely something she was waiting to do, which I love about the way they write Meadow, is they write her, you know, ever since college, waiting to say college shit to her mom.
Yeah.
You know, waiting to show how smart she is, and that she's too smart, and that she's smarter than her family, which is actually plausible. But yeah, all in all, I would have to say solid B+. You know?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I mean, episode has a lot of ins, a lot of outs, a lot of what have yous. But yeah, I think I think I come down as a solid B plus.
Solid B plus. Yep, that is Alan. If you had to rate this episode between B plus and solid B plus, how would you rate this episode?
I would rate this episode the same way that Christopher rated Kundun, which is to say, I liked it.
Hey, Marty, Kundun, I liked it.
I liked it.
I liked it. Oh, very, very good. Alan, thank you so much for coming on the pod again.
Guys, it's always a pleasure.
It's always great having you. Love to have you back whenever you can do it. And again, you are only the second repeat guest that we have had on this show. The first was my girlfriend, and that makes you my boyfriend. So
I'm going to have to tell my wife about this, and we'll have to have a conversation.
We'll have a conversation about it.
Maybe we can work something out. What's, I feel like we can.
What's the boy version of a Gumar? This is my Guman.
You're the Italian here, Vince. If anyone knows what the answer is, it's you.
This is my Guman.
This is my Guman. Guman.
Guman means something else entirely, and we don't even want to get a different thing. Now.
Let's know what we won't call you our Guman. But once again, Alan Sepinwall, you can get his book, The Sopranos Sessions, in stores now. Check it out on all of the online retailers and in person if you wear a mask. Thanks so much for coming on. Patreon.com/Fraudcast. And today is going to be the very first day that we at Pod Yourself a Gun are going to be name dropping the new tier subscribers. That's right. For $8, you get to pod yourself a shout out on the show. And also you get access to all of our bonus episodes of the Fraudcast that that we put out. So, you know, for those of you out
there
who are like,
as if we don't do enough for you with all the scooters and all kinds of bicycles.
We do a lot for you, but we've decided that beyond just listening to us every week talk about movies and television and internet shit, for $8 a month, we'll also shout you out on Pod Yourself a Gun or on the Fraudcast if we are in between seasons, which we are about to be. So without further ado, I would like to thank some of our $8 subscribers. First, it's William Seaman Porter. I'm trying to hold on. Seaman's not a good. I need to come up with a mafia name. I promised a mafia name. We'll call him Bill. Bill the Billy the Bush. All right, Billy the Bush doesn't work.
I like it. Billy the Bush.
Okay, thank you, Billy the Bush. And then
you
we also
see the
have
Bush on this guy.
Ben, just it's the whole name Ben. We'll call you Benny the Beak. And then we got Ryan, you know, Ryan the Lion. Lion is good. And then Marky Mark and the funky fuck. God, I shouldn't be the one doing this. All right, Mark, thank you so much for being a subscriber. And then finally, Brett Crawford, the crawfish with his hands. Anyways, it's worth the money. Patreon.com/Fraudcast for all the bonus episodes of the Fraudcast, which is me and Vince talking about other things other than Sopranos. So do not go a week without hearing us pod about something.
Let me leave!
Okay. Fraudcast@gmail.com for all your questions, comments, concerns. Vince, what is the Google Voice number?
415-275-0030.
All right, everyone. Thanks so much for listening. And until next time, don't stop believing. Don't stop.
You better eat the gabagools tonight and finish your brajol, or I'll make a pizza pie and I feel disgrazia. Maroni, maroni gabagool. Your motivation.
the fun.
You want that lamp?